It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show, where we love taking Bible questions. If you've been following this program the last few weeks, I've been in the midst of a series called Hope and the Promises of God. And unfortunately, one of the promises was that we would go through trials, but I talked about different things God does to help us with the trials. I ended off last week by saying trials will eventually end. And I talked about the trials that Joseph went through. I talked about the trials that Job went through. And I mentioned that I would make it personal today. So we will get to the conclusion of that series. We will get to that Bible study. But first, at this time of the year, I also like to do a lot of special things for Christmas, and we're going to begin in that vein. The Bible study will come up today in the latter part of the program, segment two. Meanwhile, if you've been following my radio show over the years or my podcasts, which have come upon the horizon recently, you know by now about my Christmas fantasy novel written for children, but also loved by adults, loved by all ages. Since the book's publication, I have been honored to do a good number of public readings, both book signings and class situations at schools or youth ministries during such occasions. Again and again, it has been requested that I produce and publish an audio version. While that hasn't happened yet, I would like to offer an audio presentation today. Not of the entire novel, but a selected portion, and you can enjoy this without any obligation or need to read the whole book, although hopefully you'll enjoy it so much you'll want to read the book, but it won't be necessary. It is an experience in its own right. And so, the story you are about to hear is taken from my book, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. Although part of a much larger adventure, the particular incident, once again, that I'm about to read aloud can still be enjoyed as a self-contained story. What you would need to know before listening is just a bit of the following background information. 12-year-old Mike Owen has received a special present from his eccentric Aunt Lorene, a magic Christmas ornament. The ornament functions as a kind of Aladdin's lamp, but with a unique twist. Each time Mike's wish is granted, something bad happens to another person who was with him at the time the wish was spoken. Now, unlike Aladdin's lamp that we're all familiar with, Mike or whoever using the ornament does not need to rub the ornament. He doesn't even need to hold it or touch it at all, but he does need to be in the same room as the ornament in order to make a wish. We join our story very early in the novel. Mike has just learned about the rules and has done some things only Mike at this point of the story and his aunt at this point of the story know about the ornament's magic charm. To the other members of the family, his father, his mother, and his little sister, this is just a Christmas ornament. This is just a decoration hanging on their tree. The book is narrated by Mike. I will be changing my voice for him, and I will be changing my voice for every one of the characters. Here now, a selection from The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. We always had leftovers the night after Christmas. The turkey and stuffing was still good, but Mom made some extra lima beans to go with it, and I hated lima beans. At first, it looked like I was going to get away with not eating them because nobody seemed to notice. But then, my little brat sister Shelley ruined everything. Daddy, Mike isn't eating his lima beans. Shut up and mind your own business. Michael, Mom said, I will not have the words shut up in this house. You know what you are, I said to Shelley. You're a fink. Shelley stuck her tongue out at me from across the table. I wanted to run over and pull every curl out of her blonde little head. I'm not usually a brother who would hurt his sister, but she was making me very angry. Anyway, it didn't matter. In front of our parents, I couldn't do much more than sit still and take what comes.
Eat your lima beans, Dad said. They're good for you.
I could never understand why parents told kids about food being good for them. They seemed to think that this was some kind of fantastic new piece of information which would instantly change our minds and cause us to actually enjoy eating whatever it was we didn't want to eat. I know many kids, and I've never seen this work on any of them, but for some reason, parents still like saying it every single time. I think I'm allergic to lima beans.
Nice try, Dad said. Now eat them. And don't make me tell you again.
Mom spoke more gently. Honey, you were tested for allergies, and you are not allergic to lima beans.
I think I am. I think that's why I don't like them. And once I threw up after eating them.
Are you going to stop the fussing? Or do I have to come over there and feed you myself? In this family, we finish our plates.
Aunt Lorene came to my rescue. Oh, James, why carry on so? If he doesn't like it, why make him eat it?
This doesn't concern you, Lorene.
It most certainly does. I'm sitting at the same table as the rest of you, and I have to listen to you bellyache.
He's my son, and I want him to eat his lima beans. He needs the vitamins.
So I'll give him a vitamin tablet after dinner.
Butt out, Lorene.
Oh, gooseburgers. Butt out yourself.
So help me.
Dad looked like he was about to shout, but instead he paused and lowered his voice.
Now look, if you had kids of your own, you'd want them to be healthy.
I do want them to be healthy.
Yeah? Well, good then. Lima beans are healthy.
Of course they are. But is it worth ruining the kid's dinner? Let him enjoy himself. After all, it's Christmas.
Christmas was yesterday.
It's the season, James. The season. Today is still Christmas.
Oh, it's Christmas. Well, whoop-de-doo-da-day. Let's not eat healthy today. It's Christmas. While we're at it, let's not eat healthy on New Year's Day either, or Valentine's Day. And let's not forget Groundhog Day.
Oh, gooseburgers. I've never had a gooseburger. I don't think Aunt Lorene has either. They probably don't even exist. But she said the word a lot.
Son, you're going to eat those lima beans. That is just the way it is going to be.
But I did eat them, Dad.
All right, now I have had enough of this nonsense.
He got up from his seat and came over to my side of the table. Honest, Dad, I ate them. Mom pointed to my plate.
He's telling the truth, Jim.
Dad looked like he was ready to fall over, for sure enough, there wasn't one lima bean to be found. While he and Aunt Lorene were arguing, I suddenly remembered that since the dining room was attached to the living room where the ornament hung on our tree, I could quietly whisper a wish. It was my very first wish, at least the very first one where I actually knew I was wishing. Up till now, I hadn't been too sure about everything Aunt Lorene explained the night before. Today, the whole family had driven up to an ice-capped mountain and played in the snow all day long, so there wasn't a lot of time to think about the ornament. But I hated lima beans so much, I just had to make the wish. I didn't even have time to wonder what bad thing might happen, because to me, nothing bad could possibly be worse than an ugly, slimy lima bean. When it worked, and I actually saw those horrible beans disappear off my plate, I wanted to jump out of my chair and scream, "It works! Oh, Aunt Lorene, isn't this wonderful? It actually works!" But I knew I would be in big trouble if Dad wasn't somehow convinced that I had actually eaten the things myself, so I pretended, as best I could, to be calm.
What's going on here? You could not possibly have eaten them so fast.
Well, I only had a few left, I lied. Shelley was the one making a big deal out of it. While you were talking to Aunt Lorene, I finished them.
You finished them. I'll just bet you did. I thought I saw more than a few.
But you were sitting way over on the other side. It must have looked like more from over there.
Yeah? Well, let's just check your napkin.
When I was little, I used to stuff my napkin with lima beans, but I hardly ever got away with it. Well, Dad looked around my plate and under the table, I started wondering about the bad thing. It was going to happen to somebody else. But who? And then I saw them, a little pile of lima beans stacked neatly on Shelly's plate. Nobody had noticed yet, not even Shelly. I tried very hard not to laugh. Dad scratched his head.
I guess he ate them.
Can we finish our dinner now in peace? Mom pleaded. Hey, Dad, aren't you going to make Shelly finish her beans? I did finish my... Hey! Aunt Lorene gave me a sharp glance as she quickly pieced together what had happened. I hoped she wouldn't tell on me. I didn't think she would, because like I said before, Aunt Lorene was different from other adults.
Your turn, Shelly. Eat your lima beans.
I did eat them, Daddy.
Then what do you call that?
Those aren't mine. Those are Mike's. He put them on my plate. How can I do that, dopey? I've been sitting here the whole time. Now, honey, Mom said, you know Mike didn't put them on your plate. Yes, he did. This is a trick. Lucky for me, Dad didn't believe in tricks.
Eat your lima beans, Shelly. I won't tell you again.
Hey, Dad, since I've done, can I be excused?
Yeah, sure.
He said that looking very confused. Shelly started crying as I walked away. I ran down the hall as fast as I could, darted into my room, jumped on the bed, and started laughing harder than I had ever laughed in my life.
Well, that's our reading. As I mentioned at the top of the program, this was taken from one chapter of my novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, selected because that particular incident came to a conclusion. There is, of course, a much larger, much more involved story if you're interested. While that may sound like a shameless plug, the plug is not about money. Yes, the book is available in places such as Amazon or Barnes & Noble, but I am less interested in money and more interested in getting this story out to people. I have especially enjoyed over the years hearing from parents and teachers how much their children or students have absolutely loved it. And when I hear that, I'm telling you folks, it is like a special Christmas present to me, so I'm willing to offer a Christmas present to you. If money is an issue, contact me and I can arrange to send you a complimentary copy. I can be reached through my website, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. And Merry Christmas.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
I'll never forget the time. This was after my very first year of doing campus ministry at Arizona State, and we returned to San Jose, staying with my in-laws, and we were going to be there for a couple of weeks vacation. It was Christmas time. I was actually scheduled to speak in a few churches when I got back to tell them about my ministry, and I got sick. Nothing serious, but very inconvenient. Sore throat, swollen glands, upset stomach, Pepto-Bismol, the whole works. And I remember my first reaction was, boy, God, why am I going through this? I was going to enjoy my Christmas vacation. I was going to enjoy my friends and family and being home. I was going to speak in churches. Like, the world's going to stop if I can't speak in churches. And then I stopped and I remembered my own teaching, my own belief. Wait a minute. Don't blame God for what you're going through, and don't try to figure out why you're going through it. Just know that God will be the knight in shining armor. He will rescue you. He will bail you out. Well, he did. I went to the doctor. The doctor did not charge me for the call. That's got to be the greatest miracle since the parting of the Red Sea. The doctor gave me an antibiotic prescription for tetracycline. I went to the druggist. The druggist made a good-natured joke. He says, well, Bob, did you come all the way from Arizona just to get sick? I said, no, I'm actually a minister and I'm home on vacation. I love telling people I'm a minister so that I can watch the reaction. Minister! Great work you guys do. Great work. I don't go to church myself, but I believe in God and I love the forest and God made the forest, right? And you want to say, hey, it's cool. It's cool. Don't worry about it. It's funny watching the reaction. People get so weird when they hear that you're in full-time ministry. But anyway, he reacted that way and, oh, wonderful work you guys are doing. He finally looked at me and said, I'll tell you what, Bob, I'm not going to charge you. I'm going to make this my Christmas present to you. This prescription will be my gift to you for Christmas. I wasn't charged for the doctor call. I wasn't charged for the prescription. The whole disease was on the Lord. In these days of inflation, it's so great to know we can get sick for free. Now, when these things happen to me, I note those stories. I catalog them because later on, they make great sermon illustrations. When I got back to Arizona, I was asked to speak in several missions conferences, not just to share about my ministry, but to also preach, which I enjoyed doing. I actually came up with a sermon about suffering. Some of the points I've been making in this present discussion I made in that sermon. If God is such a loving God, why is there suffering and evil in the world? In fact, I started calling it my suffering sermon. Well, there were some college students from Southwestern Bible College that heard me preach at one of the missions conferences. They asked me to come away with them on a retreat they were having in Globe, Arizona, and be the guest speaker and teach. This was in the middle of February. I know everybody thinks about how hot Arizona is. In February, you go up to the mountains in Arizona, you're in snow country. And I remember saying, I know, I'll go up there and preach my suffering sermon. I'll make that one of the talks. God said, I have a better idea, Bob. He didn't say this to me audibly, but he was apparently thinking this. I have a better idea, Bob. You've been preaching that sermon often, perhaps a little too often. Instead of just talking about suffering, how about if you experience some suffering this weekend and everybody can learn from your example as they watch the mature spiritual way in which you handle it? Well, we were caravanning and it was snowing and the roads were icy. And I was following some of the students in one car. Other students were following my wife and me in another car. All of a sudden, the person in front of me stopped short. I slid right into him. I hit the brakes, but we're on the ice. I slid right into him. The person behind me slid into me. I was driving a Volkswagen Beetle at the time. If you know anything about that car, it's got a fantastic engine, and it's a great car, but it's essentially made out of cardboard and a rubber band. When your Volkswagen is in a three-car accident, there is not much left. The front fender was gone. The back fender was gone. Parts of it were smashed. Miraculously, it still ran. I could still start it and make my way there for the rest of the retreat. Now, I got to tell you, I'm going to be really honest. If it were more than my wife and me there, if these were not college students that I was about to teach, I would have just hit the roof. Lame, brain, pinheaded idiot, suddenly stopping like, but I couldn't do that. I'm the guest speaker. I'm the pastor. I got out of the car. Whoa, looks like we had an accident here. Oh, well, God's going to take care of it. It was all an act, but I learned something. Acting is action. We're told that with the Holy Spirit living inside of us, if we will make the right decision, if we will choose to act even differently than we feel, the feeling will change. It started out as an act. In no time at all, it was not an act. Throughout the weekend, I had a peace. Throughout the weekend, I had a calm. It was so calm that the students thought I was crazy. Later, several months later, I met some of them, and they said, boy, when you were on that retreat and you were telling us that God was going to work everything out, we felt so bad because you were our guest and this had happened to you, but we thought you were out of your mind saying that God was going to work everything out, but boy, he did work everything out. Now, I was prepared to lose that car. This car functioned like it was brand new. A friend had helped me get it. He had actually co-signed for it, an older gentleman in our church. I didn't have a lot of money in those days. It was rebuilt. New bodywork, new engine, new clutch, new tires, new brakes. I don't think there was anything of the old car, original car, still in it, but it was still a 10-year-old car, even though it was rebuilt. Now, at least in those days, the way insurance companies work, and I realize things change over the years, they would have gone just by the blue book value. The blue book value back then said this thing was only worth about $400. $400 was more money back in the 70s, but still, $400 was not a lot of money. And if they had paid me the $400, then technically they would own the car. What I'm saying is they would have totaled the car. They would have said it's going to cost more to fix this than what the car is worth. I was prepared for a fight. I really was. Little did I know that God was going before me. Twice on the road heading back home from the retreat, I was pulled over by police officers because they saw the condition of the car. One of the taillights wasn't working. One of the headlights wasn't working. Are you the owner of this vehicle? May I see some identification and owner's registration? Well, like I said, a couple of days later, I made an appointment with my insurance agent. He sent me to an adjuster who I'd never met before, the person that's going to make these decisions. Let me just tell you how God got there ahead of me. I walk up to the guy, I said, I have a totaled car here. He just looks at me and goes, totaled car, another totaled car. I hate totaling cars. I just totaled the guy's car. I hate doing that to people. I'll tell you what, I'm going to save your car for you. Those were the immediate words that came out of his mouth before I could even get a word in edgewise. I was there prepared for a battle. The Lord went before me and spared me the battle. He wrote a note. He said, I'm going to send you to my friend Don at the Tempe Body Shop. The note said this, Dear Don, please work this out. Do not total. So I go to Don. Don looks at it. He says, Bob, if you would be willing to settle for a combination of new and used parts, we will completely repair and restore your car for $150. I said, that's wonderful. On the other hand, and I told you again, I did not have a lot of money in these days. I said, can I pay you back like $50 a month? Because I really cannot write you a check for $150. And I didn't even have a credit card yet at this time in my life. He says, oh no, we can't do that. That's your deductible. I can't take an installment plan, but I'll tell you what, instead of you paying me $50 a month, I'll only charge you $50. Wow. So I paid him $50. It gets better. A couple of days later, we get a letter from my wife's grandmother. She's an avid atheist. She hates religion. She's not wild about the fact that her granddaughter married somebody who was in full-time ministry. She says, I hear you had an accident. Must be costing you a fortune. I'm sure this won't help much, but here's a check for $50. When the car got out of the shop, it looked better than it did before the accident. They even removed a dent that some kid had made with his baseball before the accident. All right, folks, I know that a lot of people go through things far worse than this. We're going to do a future show about healing. That's another one of the promises of God. I know that people get persecuted. I know that people get murdered, sometimes murdered for their faith. God came through for me in everyday things. And when I say that trials will end, you're probably thinking of people you know who are dead now because of some affliction or because of some circumstance. Obviously, when the Bible promises that the trials will end, it does not necessarily mean that they will always end in this life. Sometimes it's the glory in heaven where all this will be put behind us. At times like this, we have to ask what we truly believe. The same Bible that promises we're going to go through suffering promises that there is a kingdom of heaven. But whether on earth, whether not on earth, whether a small trial, whether a major trial, the trial will eventually end. And once again, 1 Peter chapter 5, and the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, after you have suffered a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast. Thank you.
Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the law offices of Matthew Simone.